Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. As Zen practice finds its way in today's world, it's very obvious that it is changing. Zen practice is changing. I think we are creating a new tradition. Today, the practice is no longer so esoteric or philosophical. And based on wise sayings of elderly monks in monasteries, today's practice has more emphasis on its expression in our daily lives, an expression through our ordinary activities. So we are creating a new tradition, and it has its basis in our experiences that we share with each other, and the stories of our practice that we share with each other. So this is how our practice is appearing in the modern world. Somebody might say to his friends, I've become aware that I'm not as angry I was as in the past. And somebody else might tell her family, I noticed how patient I was in that difficult situation at work. And somebody else might tell a story about how, feeling threatened, having remained calm and attentive in a tense relationship. And these experiences, of course, are very encouraging to us. Good feeling and optimism when we notice how the practice is changing us. But actually, the real meaning of our practice is beyond our own individual experiences. Practice is beyond our personal stories. The real meaning of everyday practice is in the precepts, the Buddhist precepts. They are the foundation of selflessness in our relationships. Now, selflessness is a very broad, ambiguous concept, selflessness. The precepts provide guidelines to its meaning. If we look at the precepts, we say, oh, I see, this is the outline of selflessness. So the precepts are not about some stern ethical behavior, such as the commandments, the biblical commandments, the commandments that appear in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The precepts are not concerned with guilt. They're not concerned with punishment. And the precepts are not about following some kind of divine law handed down. Buddhist precepts have a different kind of spirit. In other words, the Buddhist precepts are not about fulfilling some kind of obligation that we have been given or that we have been commanded to follow. Precepts are not about obligations. They are softer. Their nature is softer. And they arise from our feelings, and they come from our personal choice, not because somebody said we should. When you look at the precepts and you read them and you see their list, they certainly do look like a set of rules. A set of rules for how to behave in daily life. They do look like that. But in our practice, the precepts are not a list of rules that need to be followed and then, you know, checked off after we did it. The precepts have an ethical orientation. Not an orientation that comes out of duty, but an ethical orientation. The precepts can only be followed if we have an attitude of selflessness. Buddhist ethics, or the meaning of ethics in Buddhism, means to be free from emotional cravings, free from ideas of what we want, free from ideas of who or what we think we are. This is the basis of Buddhist ethics. And when we find that kind of freedom, then we can be ourself, really be ourself, our true self, without carrying around anything extra and without being burdened by the desires of our ego. So to be ourself in a very large sense is selflessness. And that's how we keep the precepts. Because simply following a set of rules cannot provide us freedom. So if we are inspired to base our life on the precepts, it's because we want to feel our true self. We want to know who we are in a large sense. We want to go beyond an artificial life. We want to go beyond a conditioned idea of ourself. And we can feel our true self when there is no interference from desire, no interference from our thoughts, no interference from our emotions. Then we can feel who we really are. And then the precepts will be expressed naturally in all of our activities. And we can respond naturally and intuitively to whatever comes up, to everyday situations. And the continual difficulties that appear in front of us out of nowhere. When you feel this naturalness, it means you're finding confidence in yourself. which will allow you to do things without confusion. And you will feel trust in yourself and trust in others. And this trust that we feel is not foolish. It's not a foolish trust based on a single or narrow dimension, not based on how a person looks or speaks, but more. You know, quite often we meet someone who speaks very well, and we immediately trust that person without really knowing the full person. So the trust that we have in ourselves and in others that comes from the confidence in ourselves is an intuitive trust, not based on a single impression, an intuitive trust that includes all the relationships that are involved, not just one particular aspect. When we have this kind of trust, an intuitive trust, we will no longer create problems for ourselves. And of course, we still will encounter problems in life, but we will no longer needlessly create them. In our daily life, it sometimes feels a little difficult to keep the precepts. Sometimes we are pulled one way and another way. Sometimes it's a challenge, feels like a challenge to maintain our moral and ethical way of life, especially if we have very big responsibilities and our decisions affect many others. So for example, if you have a position of responsibility, a position of authority for other people, you may feel it's necessary to require them to work in dangerous situations. Or you may think you need to require them to work in ways that limit their freedom. And you feel faced with a difficult decision, what to do. If we look at the precepts and understand their meaning, we can appreciate that an ethical dilemma like that is based on a single, simple criteria. Create the least amount of suffering when you have to make a difficult trade-off. This kind of decision is based on selflessness. But without a precepts attitude, or an attitude based on precepts, we will find other criteria or make up other criteria. We may have to make a decision about laying off people or eliminating jobs and say to ourselves, well, this action is good for the economy. Sometimes we might say, with this decision, there will be some difficulty, but many people will benefit. We have to be careful when we think this way, because it could be a rationalization what's known as the ends justify the means. And we know this kind of thinking is used often in politics or business. And the danger is that there is often a hidden meaning behind this kind of thinking. The hidden meaning is, this will be good for me. So this notion that the ends justify the means is a trap, an intellectual trap. It has no place in our spiritual life. Our decisions have to be based on something else. To trust ourselves and to trust our true nature, we have to stick with the practice. We have to keep the spirit of the precepts. And the basis of maintaining the precepts in our life is our caring, our sense of caring, and not just in some kind of conventional or social sense. A caring that derives from the understanding that we all have the same true nature. So when we observe and maintain the precepts in our relationships with each other, we are respecting ourselves and we are respecting others. And we are behaving as Buddha did. And this respect is the very same as gratitude for everything and everyone that's here on this earth with us. And the understanding that they too are making their best effort to practice and their best effort to observe the precepts, even though they too may face difficulties. Everybody is making their best effort. When we recognize that, then we feel a sense of gratitude. So when we are grateful for each other's efforts, we will feel warm and generous to each other. And this warmth and generosity is not about being charming, you know, or being pious or being naive in a conventional sense. Because sometimes we have to be seriously honest about something, even though we are grateful and we are caring. Sometimes we have to be strict and forthright. Just like a good Zen teacher, just like those teachers we read about from the old tradition. So to be generous and grateful and respectful, we follow the precepts. To have determination in our practice, we follow the precepts. Then we can have an intuitive feeling of our true self. And this is the basis of ethics in our life. Zen practice still requires discipline and hard work. That hasn't changed. But in its modern manifestation, the practice is becoming rounder and softer. This is a new tradition that we are establishing. Does anybody have a question? Yes, please.
You said something about gratitude, that this is exactly the same as gratitude. I think you said it was the selflessness or non-self-orientedness. I guess it's that everyone's doing the best they can and you're grateful for that. Last week's talk, something struck me about the word gratitude. I can't remember what it was, but it hit me that gratitude was the opposite of FOMO. You heard of FOMO? Fear of missing out?
Oh, FOMO.
And I just triggered in my mind, and so this idea of gratitude and exactly what it is and how it fits in Zen practice, very interesting to me. I wonder if you'd say a little bit more about that. Gratitude and the Zen idea of how that works.
Well, usually, you know, in our life, we feel gratitude when someone does something nice for us, or is helpful to us, or gives us some kind of gift, or rescues us when we're in trouble. We feel gratitude to that person for that act. But the gratitude that grows out of our practice is more universal than that. We feel gratitude towards people we haven't even met. Gratitude for the people who we may never meet, with the understanding, because we understand that everybody in their life is making their effort, their best effort, to express themselves in the most natural way, even though their life may be difficult and they may run into problems. And even though they may be troubled, everybody is making their best effort. When we realize that, then we are grateful to everyone. So the gratitude that comes out of our practice is not limited to a few people, or some random act of kindness, or something like that. It's a kind of feeling of gratitude that doesn't depend on somebody doing something specifically for us. It depends on the understanding of the effort that we're all making together. Thank you. Yes, Columbine.
I don't have a very well formulated question, but it did strike me that, you know, the word gratitude has been very popularized lately, and it seems like what it's getting at is, you know, I have gratitude because, you know, of this thing in my life. I'm grateful for this thing. But it's always ultimately, how is it serving me? And when you mentioned about how we're all putting our best effort in, you know, it's hard for me to really, I do believe that everyone is putting their best effort in to get by day to day. But when it comes to the planet and creating a fair human world, I just don't believe that. So I wonder how we can strive to have gratitude in a bigger sense and steer away from the kind of commercial version of gratitude.
Uh, I think we have to understand that even though some people act foolishly, and dangerously, and we're disappointed that they don't see things our way or in a clearer way, even towards those people, we have to feel a sense of gratitude that somehow they're making their best effort. Even though our everyday feelings are it's a challenge. That's our challenge. How do we get there? How do we have that kind of attitude when what we want to do is stand on the rooftop and say, how can you be so? That's what we feel. And we want to go from that kind of confrontation mode to a sense of, okay, let's keep going. Keep trying. And take some courage to do that. And not get too caught up in the dramatics. It's hard. Thank you. Yes.
I was wondering about generosity. What are the boundaries of generosity in that we're selfless but we don't lose ourselves?
Say the last part again.
In that we're selfless but we don't lose ourselves.
No boundaries to generosity. We may become limited in the actual physical thing we can do in any situation to be generous. But if we bring a generous attitude to each moment, then there are no boundaries. Then we won't overlook opportunities to be generous in a real sense, in an everyday sense. There are no limits to generosity. Thank you. Yes, please.
So, I was wondering about the boundless characters, character qualities they call compassion, loving kindness, and appreciative joy and equanimity. There are three qualities of boundlessness in Buddhism they talk about. So the appreciative joy is similar to this gratitude or gratefulness quality. If I appreciate something outside, like some beautiful garden or a building, and some quality of a person, appreciating is equivalent to gratefulness. Gratefulness is putting ourselves down and other person as a great person. Is kind of gratitude creates a kind of imbalance, I feel. But appreciation is like in an equal way we do that. We don't lose ourselves. At the same time, we just appreciate the things around us. So is it appreciation and gratefulness comes under same quality?
Same thing. To appreciate our life, even though it may be difficult, and at times we suffer, to appreciate this life that we have is the same, I think, as being grateful for it, for the opportunity it provides us to experience everyday life. Thank you. Yes, please.
If you take away yourself, what's left? I think specifically, or maybe not specifically, or in a more general sense, I think I feel what you mean, but intellectually I have a hard time. I have a hard time letting go of the. Maybe it's a specifically American thing to like have a personhood and a driving goal towards something. And I think past that there's this. I think that there's a question that I have about. When you don't have a self anymore, my question is what's left and where does that come from? Like, are you, I think the root of my question is if you're entirely shaped by your environment, for example, let's say your environment isn't a great one, and you don't have a self, how do you decide to what to take and what to leave? I think that's the heart of my question.
You said you had some feeling about it, but intellectually sort of escapes. Stay with the feeling. Stay with the feeling. Let that intellectualization, because that's where the confusion comes from. You can't answer it that way. You can feel something. So stay with that. Thank you.
It was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org, that's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.